This is Rusty Gaffney. I'm at the Salud Oregon Wine Auction 2008. This is now in its 17th year. Salud, which in Spanish is the traditional toast to your health, is a little known local health care services program based in Oregon's northern Willamette Valley. The program's significance stems from its unique mission to provide healthcare services for Oregon's seasonal vineyard workers and their families. Funded by Oregon's premier wineries, Salud is the only service in the United States to recognize and support the seasonal workforce to such a degree. In 2007 alone, Salud staff identified over 5,000 eligible people and documented over 6,000 encounters, ranging from health education, cholesterol and diabetes screenings, dental care, and more. Salud-sponsored mobile clinics have traveled to more than 55 vineyard locations throughout Oregon. Medical services in 2007 increased over 25% from 2006, and close to 1,000 workers benefited from the wellness program. Salud is a non-political organization and takes no stance on immigration issues. This humanitarian outreach is extended to workers who come to us through their employers under the guidelines stipulated by the federal government. It shows a dimension to the Oregon wine industry that supersedes individual brands and wines and demonstrates the respect vintners have for this invisible workforce. I'm here at Salud Oregon Wine Auction with Amy Wesselman, who is the winery chair of Salud. And Amy, thanks for sitting down and talking to me for a few minutes about Salud. Give me a little background about the event and tell me why it's been such a successful event for Oregon.
I think the main key to its success is the strength of its mission, frankly. It's just very, very difficult to reach the audience of individuals that we're trying to reach with healthcare. They're seasonal workers who don't necessarily have an address. They certainly don't work full time for anyone, so they can't apply for regular healthcare. So somehow we need to reach these people with the healthcare services that they need. Leda Garside, who's the nurse who's really the lifeblood of the Salud program, is bicultural as well as obviously a nurse, and she does an amazing job of reaching these communities. So I think the success of the auction has to do first and foremost with the fact that these people need services so desperately, and it's a very hard group to reach, and we do a good job of it.
Now, tell me a little bit about how the auction itself is structured and how the wineries participate.
Wineries participate by donating five cases of their wine. Four are auctioned off on the Friday Big Board tasting at Domaine Drouin, Oregon. And the other case is lumped together with two other cases of wine to form an auction lot that's auctioned off in the live auction on Saturday night at the Governor Hotel.
And approximately how many people attend Salud?
About 500.
And this is, what, the 17th year, is that?
17th year, that's right.
And I thought you just left one administrative position that was occupying all your time, and now you're back at it.
I am back at it somehow. I've been involved in Salud for a number of years, actually since the birth of my twin boys in 2003, when I was still doing the International Pinot Noir celebration. I felt like I needed the IPNC as a job to do a little bit more for the world if it was going to take me away from my two kids who I love so much. And so I started becoming more and more involved in Salud and made the IPNC a benefit for Salud. And so I joined the steering committee that year in 2004, mm-hmm. and I'm the chair this year, and it's been very rewarding. It's incredibly rewarding to work with Mary McCandless, who's our director, and with all of the people at Tuolity Healthcare, and most especially with Leda Garside, who is, if I can digress just a little bit and tell a story about her that sure. that continues to amaze me. We had a patient who desperately needed open heart surgery, and we had lined up the doctors to do it. The surgery was going to be free to her. All the follow-up would be free. She wouldn't do it because she had been in the hospital and she had seen someone die during surgery and was terrified of anesthesia and didn't have a good understanding of it. And Leda Garside was able to meet with this woman over the course of weeks and eventually convinced her that it was a very safe process. It was something that she could know all about before the surgery actually happened. And they even showed her a video of an open heart surgery to show her how it would work and agreed to stay in the room with her. And over the course of these weeks, Leda convinced this woman to have the surgery, and she's now living a very healthy life. She said that it's just incredible to be able to breathe freely, like there's not a huge weight sitting on her chest. And to me, that story encapsulates the heart and soul of Salud, because it's not just providing medical services, it's providing them to people who otherwise can't get them, and it's providing them to people who find themselves very lost in the healthcare system of the United States.
I was really impressed walking around and speaking with the winemakers and tasting these wines. They're remarkable wines from the 2007 vintage. And I'm very impressed that the winemakers take the time to make special cuvées that are only available for Salud.
Well, that's a little bit self-indulgent too, I have to say, as a winemaker, to always be thinking about the balance in your cellar between your reserve wines and your regular wines and your vineyard designated wines or whatever it is that you produce. Salud offers you an opportunity to take your pet out of the cellar, your very favorite wine, maybe blend it, maybe not, and bottle a few bottles of it. And they're very special wines. They're special to the winemakers, and they're very special to the people who purchase them.
Now, anybody listening that wishes to attend this event in the future, what's the website?
The website is www.saludwineauction.org. It can also be found through Tuolity Healthcare.
And as you said, the Friday event is held in the Willamette Valley at Domaine Drouin.
That's right.
And then the Saturday event is held in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a two-day event.
It's a two-day event, and if you purchase something at the previous auction, then it actually becomes a three-day event, because each three-case lot that's purchased during the live auction on Saturday night is bundled together with a dinner with the winemakers of those wines. So all of us who participated in the auction last year were out to dinner last night with the winners of those cases. So you not only get to have these wines to take home with you, but you get to have a dinner with the winemakers as well.
Wow, that sounds really interesting.
It's a lot of fun, and I think it's fun for people to be able to be a fly on the wall, so to speak, with a bunch of winemakers who still have stains on their hands from just getting out of harvest.
Yeah.
And they kind of get the first glimpse of what the vintage is going to look like.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me about Salud.
It's always my pleasure, Rusty.
This is Rusty Gaffney again. I'm sitting here with Nancy Ponzi, and we're going to talk a little bit about the origins and the evolution of the Salud annual Oregon Wine Auction. Let's go back to the start, and you were there at the beginning, and you're one of the founders. Let's talk about that.
Well, the very beginning, the very, very beginning, was our major hospital in the western part of our rural county wanted to do something with the wine industry, which was coming to attention. This was about 1990. And another wine vintner went with me to a meeting, and the hospital suggested that we do some sort of collaborative event, and we said, oh, thank you, we really don't want another event. But then we realized with such resources it would be stupid to turn it down, so we came up with a proposal of doing an auction, and then realizing that the need is that our seasonal workers are, at that time we had a lot more migrant workers than we do now. Most, hardly anyone is migrant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the hospital surprisingly went for it. And so it's been a great collaboration, because it wasn't just a volunteer group, and we didn't have to scratch around to have office support and PR support and office space and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been just a major and very enthusiastic player since 1992, when we held our first event.
Mm-hmm. And what has been your role?
I think I started out as the chair and the co-chair, or the first year, I think I was just the general scare up some people to come to our event.
And so now this has become quite a significant event, and I know this year a significant amount of money was raised, pretty close to last year.
Yeah, we're especially happy this year that we did as well as we did. Last year we almost got to $800,000 with our one event. And so, of course, we were thinking we'd break the million this year, but as we all know too well, we are so happy that we came out with, I just have the numbers here, $733,000, well, almost $34,000, that we're down a little, about 5% from last year. Mm-hmm. So we are elated, and we really feel that people who are coming not only do they have to love the wine, otherwise they wouldn't spend any money on it, but they love the event and the mission.
Well, I know I sure enjoyed the event. It was, the organization is very impressive. The wines are, of course, outstanding. The whole event is a celebration of wine and for a great purpose.
Yeah, it's been a kind of an interesting project to work on because you have very separate things going. It's not a marketing event per se, because what we're doing, the mission is the important thing. But at the same time, you have to somewhat have it as a marketing event because we're asking the wineries to donate. For many of the wineries, it's a big, big donation for them, mm-hmm. not only in time, but in their... You know, we're asking them to donate a quarter of a barrel of their most premium wine. The special cuvée, the one that they love the most, is what goes to the Salud.
Mm-hmm. While I've got you here, can we go back and talk a little bit about the 70s when Oregon Pinot Noir industry was in its... beginnings, and I know you and Dick came here and planted in 1970, is that right? And you were among the first, the pioneers. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know people listening are interested.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously I could talk a lot about it, but I will try to not be too long. The truth is that, yes, in the late 60s, there were truly a handful of people, four families, pretty much, who all kind of came up with this weird idea that not only did they want to have a vineyard, but they wanted to grow Pinot Noir, and somehow decided that the Willamette Valley was the place to do it, although everyone of importance who's supposed to know about viticulture said that was crazy, and if we wanted to grow Pinot Noir, we need to go to California. Mm-hmm. But we did it anyway. And I always have to tell people that it wasn't there was some vision involved, but there was also a lot of emotion involved, and you have to put it in the context of many of our current fans of Pinot Noir don't remember, but the 60s were very turbulent, and many of us who were through that time didn't want anything to do with the government or anything to do with the establishment or anything to do with much of anybody. We wanted to go back to the land and try to find some meaningful thing to do. Mm-hmm. So we came up with putting a vineyard, which is about as ambitious as you can get because it's one of the most ancient agricultural crops. So, you know, there's all kinds of meaning that goes with that. There were other reasons. It wasn't that we all just had the stroke of lightning that came down and told us, go north and plant Pinot Noir and ye shall prosper. In fact, none of us had a clue that we would prosper. That wasn't even the point.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, some of the people that came here at the time, David Lett, had some training in wine. They had gone to UC Davis, but Dick and yourself had really no formal training in wine. Is that right?
No, that's right. Well, actually, we were the least trained. David Lett, Dick Erath, and Charles Corey all were at Davis. In fact, they knew each other at Davis. Mm-hmm. And so there was some, they were very involved in the climatology programs there and knew that. My husband, by contrast, is a first-generation Italian. And if you know any of those, they think that they know how to make wine. It's somehow inherent. So we actually had been making home wine in our, we lived in Los Gatos, California. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We had a vineyard in our backyard. There was a novitiate nearby. In the 60s, it was a novitiate. And that was how they supported the school there for young priests. And they were very kind to us, and they thought that was so beautiful that we would take our little babies up and pick grapes and make wine. And so we did that, and most of the wine wasn't very good, as most of the homemade Italian wine mm-hmm. is, parenthetically. But then my husband, being a smart person and a well-educated person, kept reading books, and he finally read the books, and we learned about sulfur. It was very interesting. We learned how to make wine that didn't spoil by March. And yes, he took some of the quick courses at Davis and so forth. I mean, but the more important thing we did as far as our education was to travel. And we, you know, the way we're making wine here in Oregon, Willamette Valley, well, it's evolved, but it's much closer to the cool climate regions of Europe than anything to do in California. In California, then, again, you have to think back that many years. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much big winemaking. Mm-hmm. There was, if you even knew the word boutique, it was just barely glimmering. There were very, very few. Right. So we learned so much going to particularly Alsace, and Burgundy, and it always amazes me as I look back how generous those people were with us and many of the other people from Oregon. I remember the Campbells relating this same sort of story of traipsing in and, you know, in your Volkswagen bus mm-hmm. and say, you know, bonjour, we are going to make Pinot Noir in Oregon. Well, they had no idea where we were from. I mean, Oregon was no place. And yet, they would take us to their research stations. They would taste wines with us. They would talk to us and walk through the vineyards. And that's where we learned really at least direction. Mm-hmm. And then it was back here and learning by doing it. Yeah. And that's really how we all learned. And the fortunate thing was we taught each other. And we talked with each other constantly. And we were all kind of in the same boat in that the other part of it was, I don't think I mentioned, none of us had any money. Mm-hmm. We had enough money to, but not like real money.
Right.
So we were very interdependent, and I think that has a legacy that's continued even now with our 400 or 500 wineries, whatever we have here now. There's still tremendous camaraderie here, a lot of what you just tasted with people, and I'm sure you felt in the room. Nobody's trying to point out to you, you know, my wine is actually better, or I don't like that one, or everybody is kind of for each other. And what has happened around the world as this new world Pinot Noir has gone into New Zealand and Chile and these different parts of the world. There are, in fact, very few places in the world that can grow Pinot Noir. So there is a great comradeship anyhow. We're mm-hmm. all in it together.
I noticed that. Yeah, I definitely noticed that. The winemakers are extremely complimentary about other people's wines and encouraging and positive. I really like that vibe that I get when I'm here.
Yes, and many people from other wine regions note that as well. Mm-hmm. And I know that even in Burgundy, and there's been a great close relationship between Burgundy and Oregon through the years, is that in the 70s, Burgundians did not taste with each other. They didn't taste each other's wines. They didn't have tasting groups. Mm-hmm. And I truly feel it's been through the association here in Oregon where they saw that that we got together and we drank each other's wines, we talked about them, at times we critiqued them, then that has carried over where that takes place in Burgundy now. And they have, you know, they're even tasting groups between villages and a lot more inter-association rather than just on the social right. level of on a professional level. Right. And I think it's been good for Pinot Noir every place.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were involved also, weren't you, in International Pinot Noir celebration?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, when you're around this long, you've kind of been involved in everything. And the thing was, as I said, nobody in Oregon had any money, so we didn't have we had a trade organization and we had this, but we had no budgets to do anything. So anything we did to market our wine, we had to do in a more creative way. And I think that through our creativity and imagination and a lot of effort, we've done some amazing things here in Oregon that have been, you know, kind of top of the line, as it turns out, just in marketing effort. The International Pinot Noir Celebration is one of those. It definitely was a marketing effort. How do we tell people that we're here in Oregon, we're making wine? A couple of the things we did that are right in the name that I think were brilliant from the beginning was making it international and making it a celebration. We never Well, the obvious thing was to do a competition.
Right.
Why would you do a competition? That sets up another thing. We just wanted people to know that we are making some really great wines out here in Oregon and draw attention to it. So the International Pinot Noir Celebration has always been just that. And the wines have been tasted in that same sense of, oh my gosh, look, we have a Pinot Noir from Tasmania. Here, Joe, try this. This is fantastic. Mm-hmm. That kind of attitude, rather than who's getting a gold medal or a silver medal, because if you're around very long, you know that's fleeting and often just depends on what some judge who may or may not know what he's saying judges
right.
anyway.
Well, it's really remarkable that you came up with that concept, because, of course, there's been many, many events, particularly Pinot Noir events, that have followed in step.
You know that they have followed, because nobody did a Pinot Noir event
right,
before.
Right.
That in itself was really radical, because, again, go back to the beginnings of the International Pinot Noir Celebration, very few people in the United States drank Pinot Noir.
Yeah. Well, what was the first year? I forget.
Oh, I believe it was 87, but don't hold me to that. Was before
Salute. Because really Pinot Noir, at least in California, was just kind of getting off the ground in the late 80s in terms of small boutique producers, and Oregon was gaining some notoriety by then as well.
Well, yeah, we'd had quite a lot of notoriety. We'd had, as far as Ponzi, we had our first great write-up. We had a feature. Frank Pryor did a whole article on us in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, they were very temporary things, because we would get something like that. Of course, that was a New York Times, of course, you still want to hit that. But wherever we went, we'd get attention, but we had no follow-up. We didn't have a market. We had no distribution base. We didn't have enough wines to even fill a distribution network.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a whole buildup of how to actually market the wines once you got people looking at us.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have done much better than others at that.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, there's a lot of people who come into this business and they love doing the vineyard, they like doing all that, they like making the wine, they like all this, we were just talking about the hard work of harvest.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't want to do, and they'll openly tell you, you know, I don't like this marketing part, I'm not doing that, I'll turn that over to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't work. And you can see that even at the most prestigious places, say the Wine Experience in New York City. The principals are there of the most famous wineries in the world. The principals are there doing right. just what we do all the time. They pour wine and talk to people.
That's right. Well, thank you very much for talking with me. It's really been enjoyable.
Thank you for your interest in Oregon. We appreciate it.